This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. In January of this year, a week before Super Bowl Sunday, the writer Steve Almond posed a provocative question in the New York Times Magazine. A lifelong football fan, he asked, is it immoral to watch the Super Bowl? The article went crazy viral, and Almond was praised for raising that question in some quarters and accused of being a crybaby who should, quote, iron his panties in others. His new book, Against Football, One Fan's Reluctant Manifesto, charges that fans are complicit in the astonishing brutality of the game and argues that allegiance to football legitimizes and even fosters within us a tolerance for violence, greed, racism, and homophobia. Fighting words indeed. And Steve Almond, New York Times bestselling author, joins us now with more. Steve, welcome back to Word of Mouth.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I want you to know that I did iron my panties for this interview.
I'm very glad to hear that.
Yes.
We were hoping you'd be living up to form. Now, Steve, you expect people to be angered by this manifesto. So first, can you establish your sort of street cred as a fan from an early age? Why did you love the game?
Well, I started watching, I think like most fans, I started watching because my dad watched football. And I think sports in general and football especially is really a way that little boys especially can kind of bond with their fathers and in some larger sense maybe be initiated into the world of men. So I watched a lot of football. I became very attached to the Oakland Raiders only because they were super good when I was growing up. And they were I should have rooted for the San Francisco 49ers because they were closer, but they were terrible. So I rooted for the Raiders. And I really have found that it's ebbed and flowed, waxed and waned. But I really, when I'm especially stressed out or even lonely, the games have taken on incredible importance. So I would like sneak off every Sunday when I was in graduate school, for instance. I would wander up to campus and just try to find a TV. But I totally hid it from everybody else in my life, like a drug addiction, really.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you describe it. There's a quote from Caroline Knapp's book, Drinking a Love Story, as you sort mm-hmm. of secretly kind of hiding yourself in this atmosphere that you don't realize is not your friend necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, the way I would say is that like any passion that we have, you turn to it in order to experience feelings that you can't reach by other means. But those feelings are very complicated for me because on the one hand, I was totally absorbed by the games. But afterwards, there was this weird feeling of just guilt and shame. And I was just like really a regressed feeling, which is probably how you should feel when you're a grown man, who has sort of important business to do in the world and you're shut into a giant emporium filled with chicken wings, watching giant men in tight pants bash one another's skulls. That's probably not going to rank as like super mature behavior.
But it does bring back some sense of that unfettered play and leaping and throwing in childhood for you. And you quote other writers who've described similar feelings. Your own description yep. of being a kid, playing the game, pretending not to be afraid, you all feel kind of united and feel tested. You hurt yourself badly a few times and accepted the pain. Is that right. The footballer's creed? You just keep going.
Well, I think it's sort of like I think of football as a kind of exalted cult of masculinity. And it represents these ideals of courage, fearlessness, self-sacrifice to a greater cause. I mean, there's even a kind of muscular Christianity that I think is folded into our feelings about the game. After all, we go to worship on Sunday, right?
Right.
And there is this feeling, it's a ritual, it's a pageant. It's very much concerned if you watch the replays over and over, they show these replays of the bodies being really suffering brain trauma oftentimes. But to me, that's very much like our modern passion play. It's a desire to see the injured body as the kind of embodiment of sacrifice to a greater cause. And, I also feel like in its purest form, football is this reconnection to the intuitive joys of childhood, the stuff you're talking about, leaping and jumping, catching, throwing, tackling, trying to evade someone. I took part in those, and I love watching that in football. The problem is that all that amazing, beautiful, heroic stuff is attached to all these very dark moral hazards that most fans, myself included, just want nothing to do with. We just don't want to look at it at all.
Well, let's get to some of those. We now know about the accumulated impact of all of those, you know, beautiful-looking plays, those lambs to the slaughter on some level, in both professional league football, in college football, high school, and kids. Give us a little bit on the data of what actually is happening to players' brains after hitting each other over and over and over again.
So the NFL spent a long time denying that there was any link between concussions and brain damage or brain trauma illnesses. And that after a while, it just became obvious. Enough medical research emerged, and frankly, enough famous football players wound up killing themselves in flamboyant ways and then had their brains autopsied, and they found that there was this illness called chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE is how it's known. It's basically a form of dementia, and it comes from not just from catastrophic hits. It actually is just as dangerous, if not more dangerous, because they're invisible, are all the minor sub-concussive hits that footballers experience every single play of every single practice, just those little car collisions inside their helmets that don't register as a concussion or even an injury, but they are in fact the brain's a soft organ slamming against the skull. And the result is that in some players, they develop dementia, oftentimes years after they've played. But the really scary thing for me is, for instance, the study they did, a bunch of researchers did a couple of years ago out at Purdue University. The researchers wanted to find out, well, what's the effect of concussions in high school football players? So they put sensors in a couple of dozen high school football players' helmets and found that they're actually just trying to see what's the effect of concussions. So they set up this control group of kids who'd never gotten any concussions, and they gave them, you know, tests to determine their brain activity. Here's where it gets terrifying. It turns out that even the kids in the control group showed diminished brain function, and that diminishing got worse and worse as the year wore on, so that by the end of the year, some of them had no actual brain function in portions of their frontal lobes. That, to anybody who's a parent or a school administrator or just a sentient human being, should be deeply terrifying. The idea that we send kids to high school to get smarter, to have more brain activity, and in fact, by playing football, they show diminished brain activity.
And these are sub-concussive hits in many cases. 65,000 reported concussions a year among high school players. Now, the argument, of course, is that football is a way for young boys to work out their aggressions. You know, these are our would-be warriors. They're not going to stay home and crochet, as one of the commenters said in response to your manifesto. And that players understand the risks of the game, and especially in pro sports, are very, very well paid to sustain those risks. So they have free will. What's your argument to that?
Well, look, I, like every other fan, carry around my little suitcase of rationalizations and excuses. And every fall, I unpack it. And the first one I take out is, oh, they get paid a lot. That's their choice. They're adults and so forth. And there are a couple things to say about that. First, we're really not talking about the players. My book is really trying to say, hey, the moral equation you need to be paying attention to is your culpability as a fan. If you watch football, believe me, the NFL doesn't just see you as a fan. You're a consumer. You are feeding the $10 billion a year industry that is the NFL. And you're also making the decision that you feel it's morally acceptable to watch as a form of entertainment a game in which men might suffer brain damage, that you think that that is okay. Whether you want to face it or not, that's the decision you're making. So the first thing I'd say is it's not about the players. It's about the fans. We're the ones who built the football industrial complex. And if it's ever going to change, we're the ones who are going to have to change it.
We're talking with the writer Steve Allman about the sport that he love-hates, football.
That's right. My frenemy. My frenemy, the NFL.
Your frenemy, the NFL. His new book is called Against Football, One Fan's Reluctant Manifesto. Raises a number of questions about America's relationship to football. It is our worship of the game, he argues, that blinds us to its pathologies. How about these behavior issues? We may have notions of what goes on inside of the locker room, this kind of jockish misogyny, homophobia. How are we as game fans complicit with that?
Well, you know, it's hard to talk about this stuff because basically football is a place that I think Americans go, mostly males, but plenty of women as well, to not think about this stuff. It really has essentially the values of like maybe the 1850s, you know, in terms of how men and women are defined. And if you really just step away from the game, as I painfully have been doing over the past few months, it becomes much clearer. I mean, it's just men play. They're all hugely muscled men. They're all super aggressive. They are selected to be super aggressive and savage. And that's actually what makes them good, is that they're able to dull out their empathy and hit somebody hard, put them on the ground, hopefully put them out of the game. Women are pictured on the sidelines, jiggling, or maybe being a pretty fan in the stands, or the girlfriend or the wife of some player. And those are gender roles that are not modern gender roles. Nowhere else in American culture, other than athletics, can you really see that kind of like incredibly narrow idea of what a man or a woman is. Every time that there's a player like Ray Rice, the Baltimore Ravens running back, who allegedly punched his girlfriend and knocked her out, right? And there's the video of him dragging her out of an elevator. And, he got punished by missing two games. And he also, wound up not having to spend any time in jail. If he was somebody other than a football player, if he was an undocumented worker, if he was just a poor person in this country, if he wasn't a celebrity and especially a famous athlete, he just wouldn't have gotten the same treatment. We give these guys incredible power, status, prerogative, and we really need them so badly, whatever they supply us, that we not only welcome them back with a slap on the wrist, but there were fans who were actually applauding when he returned to the practice field, some of whom I suspect have daughters or wives or, sisters who are the same age as the girl, as the young woman that he allegedly punched and knocked out. That's some bad values that we are taking in and expressing through football.
Well, we don't think about football in moral terms, as you said just a moment ago. So will reading this book ruin the game for football fans, and should it?
I hope it doesn't ruin the game, but I suffered through having to turn away from this game right, the football season's starting. I'm jonesing as bad as anybody because I've really said, I can't watch. So I get how exciting it is, and I get the charge that it has. And I'm not trying to abolish football or lead some crusade against it. What I'm trying to say is we need to have a national conversation. When something is as important and as huge as an industry, but not just that, as an emotional and psychological force in our culture, we give so much of our time and passion and attention and money to this singular form of violent entertainment. We need to think about what it is that we're consuming. And nobody wants to do that. They don't want to do that when it has to do with their pleasures. Nobody wants to see how the sausage is made. Nobody wants to go into the slaughterhouse. We don't want to do that stuff. It makes our lives inconvenient. But you know what? Moral progress is inconvenient. And I think my hope is that the book will start a conversation so that fans are forced not to quit the game, but to fully confront what it is they're watching.
Steve Allman, he writes commentary, journalism, fiction, and soon to be a whipping post, is my guest. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
I'm glad you're so optimistic. Thank you.
Steve's new book is called Against Football, One Fan's Reluctant Manifesto. So what do you think? Has the game been ruined for you? Is merely watching a sport that you have some objections to being complicit? Or as one headline criticized Steve's manifesto, Steve Allman, wah, wah, wah. You can weigh in yourself on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wordofmouthradio, or on Twitter @wordofmouth. We'd love to hear from you. Americans love an anti-hero. There are plenty in the NFL and plenty more in HBO's dark new show, The Leftovers. So why is this grim spectacle, which has all the trappings of a hit, being rejected by critics? We'll find out after the break.